Chapter 1. The Call of the Loon. What is hell? I maintain that it is the suffering of being unable to love. Fyodor Dostoevsky, The Brothers Karamazov, 1880. I took one look at Uncle Gary, spun around, and headed for the car. Miss Marshmallow or not, this Uncle Gary dude looked like Frankenstein's monster. His thick beard and mustache couldn't hide the jagged scar that started under his left eye and ripped sideways towards his mouth. It disappeared into the wiry hair under his nose, but reappeared on his neck, a pale line punctuated by small holes marking the scars from the stitches that had held his face together. I'd have to be a nutcase to want to stay with a guy that looked like that. "Oh, no, you don't." Miss Marshmallow collared me, and her big sausage fist curled around my t-shirt. She dragged me around to face Uncle Gary, where he had retreated to the couch. He sat staring at a wall covered in a map of Vietnam, with pictures and yellowed newspaper clippings tacked around it. He ignored us while I wriggled in her grasp. Miss Marshmallow was the name I'd given the social worker, crammed into her white blazer and white polyester pants that made a squeaky sound when her thighs rubbed together. She smelled of cats and spearmint. Not a pleasant combination. She faced Uncle Gary, with one hand planted on her round hip and the other twisted in my collar. She squinted at Uncle Gary with a feral light in her eyes, shining through her wire-rimmed glasses. "Now, Mr. Grayson," she said through her nose, "you are responsible for Ian's welfare. You've got to see that he gets signed up for school in the fall, that he eats a healthy diet, and that he sees a doctor when he doesn't feel well." She might as well have been talking to a fence post. Uncle Gary never said a word. He didn't even look at her. His expression of annoyed indifference remained the same. She'd been dismissed before she'd begun. Even I could see this. But it took Miss Marshmallow a solid 20 minutes of talking herself blue in the face to figure it out. Uncle Gary never said boo to me. He didn't look at me while Miss Marshmallow sputtered on, except for a quick glance of his icy blue eyes. If it hadn't been for that one glance, I wouldn't have guessed Uncle Gary knew I existed. He didn't want me any more than I wanted him. Still, it looked like we were going to be stuck with each other for 5 or 6 years, at least until I turned 18 and could get the heck out of the Maine woods and back to civilization. After glaring at Uncle Gary as if she wanted to grab him in a headlock and squeeze until his head popped off, Miss Marshmallow left, shaking her head all the way to the car. I'm pretty sure I heard a few swear words and phrases like, "totally cracked," and "what were they thinking?" and "no choice but to leave him." Good riddance, Miss Marshmallow. But now what? I was stuck with Frankenstein's monster, who was not at all happy that I had darkened his doorway. I didn't wait for Uncle Gary to say anything. I figured if he'd had anything to say to me, he would have said it. So I strode out the door into a muggy evening in the woods of Maine, down the sloping lawn of shortcut grass, and onto the dock that jutted into what Miss Marshmallow had called Merriam's Lake. My sneakers thumped a hollow rhythm as I strode to the end, flopped down on the edge of the dock, and studied my surroundings. The sun struggled to keep its head above the wall of pines. Its long copper rays stretched across the lake and danced on the shifting water. A cool breeze bent the rushes along the shore that whispered their protest at the intrusion. The fishy tang of the lake and the sharp scent of the pines wafted up to me. I stripped off my shoes and socks and dangled my feet, letting the dark surface of the lake tickle my toes. Then I heard it. I lifted my head. It sounded again. The notes started low, then rose in a long, wavering succession of sounds that reached a high crescendo before fading away. It was a wail of immense beauty and sadness. It drove into my heart like a nail in a coffin. A lump rose in my throat. I reached up to hug the wooden dock post as an answering call floated through the evening stillness. What animal could make a sound like that? I didn't know, but it echoed the sound my heart had been making for weeks now. Memories came back to me in a rush of anguish I couldn't escape. The smell of Mama baking bread, the glittering lights of the Christmas tree while we drank eggnog, playing catch with Dad in his big, oversized leather mitt, tickling Sissy to hear her laugh, the crunch of metal, the sound of Mama's scream. I let go of the dock and jumped to my feet, gazing out over the quiet beauty of the lake in the summer sunset. I hated it. I hated it all. But mostly I hated the great billowing emptiness where my heart should have been. The wavering song came again, and I thought it was trying to say something to me, to warn me that Uncle Gary's icy blue glance hid secrets, secrets I might not want to know. Light pierced my eyelids, and I woke with a jerk. Morning light cut a long line from floor to ceiling. Where was I? It took a moment before it came to me. Uncle Gary's. The words burst into my mind. I threw off the covers and thudded my way downstairs, half afraid his monster face would be waiting to greet me, and half afraid he had left me alone. He hadn't said much last night when he showed me to my room and left me to settle in. Miss Marshmallow had already fed me dinner at some greasy diner in town, so there wasn't much to say. The expression of wary resignation lingered on his face as he closed the door to my room. I had no idea what to expect now as I stepped into the kitchen and stopped, looking around. A box of Cheerios slouched beside a bowl and a spoon on the table. The box was faded and sagging like it had spent its life on a shelf somewhere, unwanted. A truck door slammed outside. An engine roared. I peeled back the blue curtain as Uncle Gary drove away in his big red truck, leaving a lingering cloud of dust. I watched him go, wondering when, or if, he would come back, and what I would do when he did. I had the whole summer in front of me with nowhere to go and nothing to do. So I flopped into a chair at the table to leisurely consume a bowl, or three, of cold cereal. Cheerios never did fill me up. But Uncle Gary had at least heard the part about feeding me, even if he hadn't listened to anything else. I was chewing through my third bowl when I noticed the yellow note taped to the back of the wilting Cheerios box. It read, "Back for lunch," in a wiggly hand, like a worm had dipped itself in ink and crawled across the page. I guessed Uncle Gary was no scholar. Staring out the kitchen window at the lacy white clouds sliding over the blue Maine sky, I let my mind wander. I had flown in to Bangor, Maine, from Boston, where Miss Marshmallow was waiting for me with her meaty smile and a big sign written in florid letters, Ian Frost. She stuffed me into her sickly brown Mercury Bobcat and drove 3 hours into the Maine woods. All the while, I had to endure Miss Marshmallow psychoanalyzing me. "You know, post-traumatic stress disorder's quite common," she said in her nasal schoolteacher voice. "It's nothing to be ashamed of." I wasn't ashamed. I was broken, and I knew it. When a person was broken the way I was, he couldn't patch it up with a simple chat. I didn't know how to fix it, and it seemed obvious to me that no one else did either, least of all Miss Marshmallow. "It's normal to feel lost and alone, even hopeless," she continued. "You need to accept your feelings. Sometimes you'll feel angry, and that's okay." She glanced at me, but I kept my gaze on the trees flashing past. "Ian, I'm trying to help you." I said nothing. The word broken echoed through my brain. "Exercising can help," she continued, "and so can keeping a diary of your feelings. You need to let out the frustration and despair somehow. Find a channel for it." I ground my teeth. A channel for my self-loathing? A channel for my smashed heart and empty life? There was nothing left to channel. I was broken. Why couldn't she get it? So here I was, my second day in Maine, eating breakfast alone in a tiny kitchen with no hope of ever escaping until I turned 18. I was trapped with an uncle who cared so little about his family, he hadn't even gone to his own sister's funeral. As I munched the Cheerios, I considered my situation. Did it really matter that no one alive wanted me? As this thought struck me, loneliness and despair surged up. A monster I had banished to the shadows of my mind reared its ugly head in expectation of a feast. I jumped up with a sudden jerk and strode into the front room. I wasn't going anywhere, but I had to move. I had to find something to do, something to keep the monster in its chains.